yes, be the local expert. Remember that mainstream media is always going to take the attitude, if it bleeds, it leads. So more often than not, you will get the bad news that will come out of the media. But, you know, sort of you as the local expert, don't try and go national and compete with Rupert. Be local and be somebody that your local residents are going to look at you and go, all right, what's the real news? What do I need to know?
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent, for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey everyone, it's Sam here. Well, it's 10 years of Elite Agent this year and we've changed quite a few things this month or over the last quarter. We have a new editor, some new team members. We've launched a quarterly digital magazine cover series this quarter with the theme of reinvention. So as you might have guessed, we've been reinventing ourselves a little bit as well in with the theme. And one of those reinventions is introducing some new old talent back to the podcast, and that is where it all started with Elite Agents publisher Mark Edwards. So welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, so probably around about 450, 470 episodes in. So yeah, I'm just sort of put the training wheels back on the seat.
Well, you are a popular guest when you're on, so we're going to make this a regular thing. We're calling this new show or this new segment of Elevate On Closer Inspection. It's a bit of a double entendre on the real estate concept of open for inspection and maybe taking a bit more of a deep dive into the topics that are shaping our industry, because we publish a lot of stuff on Elite Agent and sometimes, you know, with the daily change of publishing, things don't get the airtime or the deep dives that they should get, and also to be able to give our listeners some more actionable tactics. So now that I've given you the big intro and told everyone that you're back as a regular, you're not going to...
I'm not going to ghost you again.
Well, you can't ghost me.
We all know that. So on closer inspection, so are we talking like sort of putting the stink eye on things, or we're going a little deeper?
I think we're doing both actually, because the thing is with our position as publishers, are not supposed to give opinions on things. Like, we take a lot of opinions from contributors and things like that. But when we publish things on Elite Agent, we kind of have to maintain a bit of a stiff upper lip on whether we agree with something or not. I guess doing this gives us a little bit of an opportunity to show you guys a bit more of our personality and maybe a bit of behind the scenes, which is how the podcast started, really,
wasn't it? Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. But we also, I suppose, don't just take everything and publish it as well. So there is a degree of our own level of integrity as to what we publish out to the industry itself. So I think this is a great opportunity for us to be able to have a look at what has been published, what's caught our eye. And as you said, you know, sort of take it on closer inspection of a couple of the things that have gone on in the not too distant past.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, whenever you're on the podcast, people often email me and say, you know, you and Mark have got great chemistry. What do you say to that?
Well, we're married. Married in life and in business. So yeah, look, you know, I think there's something interesting that, you know, so a lot of people say, and, you know, so when you talk to people, how do you work with the person that you actually live with? My immediate response is I just couldn't imagine any other way of doing it. So, you know, there you go.
Oh, all right. Well, that's it. You've all heard it, folks. He's going to be around for a few episodes. So tell me what we're diving into today.
So we've picked out on three things we want to have a chat about in this particular session. The first one was a piece that was penned by Andy Reid, Do Nice Guys Finish Last? So it's a very interesting one. Reality TV, is it good for the real estate industry? It's something that polarizes a lot of people. And the other one, which is obviously, you know, sort of got a lot of attention and focus these days, is should we be using AI to be communicating with our clients? So there's a couple of interesting ones there. So do you want to kick us off with Andy's piece?
Yeah, well, this piece actually made me think. It was called, and by the way, Do Nice Guys Finish Last? Andy Reid is definitely a nice guy, definitely one of the nice guys in the industry. But it actually made me stop and think for a while about the question of, do nice guys always finish last? Because I guess the real estate industry has a bit of a reputation. I would say that, you know, we're nice guys. You and I are nice guys, but we haven't bought the million-dollar yacht or the Ferrari yet or anything like that.
Yeah, I can't really see that on the horizon.
Yeah, sometimes it makes me wonder if we should be a bit more...
Have a bit of mongrel.
Yep. But Andy suggested that the idea is to find a middle ground, which he calls a line of confidence. So it means you can't necessarily be too nice because you might get, I don't know, I don't want to say walked over, but when it comes to things like setting fees and sticking to your fees and maybe sort of trying to be a people pleaser, which we've all been guilty of it at one point or another, you can't be an asshole either because that doesn't work. And then he sort of talks about a middle ground being the line of confidence.
Mm.
So what are your thoughts on all of that? Do nice guys finish last or is there a better way?
Oh, look, it's a tough one because, you know, it really does come down to what your values are as an individual. I think some people are wired differently. I know, you know, sort of when we went through the process of selecting the agent to sell our house, we've been over this a few times, so I'm not going to labor on it, but we did see a number of people that were on the extreme right of the equation being not the nice guy. And then we saw, you know, sort of a couple of people that were on the, well, actually one guy that was clearly the nice guy on the other side of the equation. I think the challenge that you've always got with being the nice guy is that you're adding advice, and then somebody else just basically picks that up and either runs with themselves or thanks for all that advice, but we're just going to go with the other guy who basically encourages to take action. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things is being the nice guy doesn't necessarily equate to encouraging action. You don't want to be in the situation where you're actually trying to move the world forward at the risk of upsetting someone.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard line because I'd much rather be nice than the alternative, which Andy did talk about. I think he said asshole, so I'm going to say it too.
We can say what we want. It's our podcast.
Well, it's our podcast, that's right. We'll try to keep the swearing to a minimum. But on the other hand, you do have successful people that they don't come across that nice. And we've had a lot of really lovely people that we've met. Mm-hmm. And then we've had some people that we've met where we've just sort of thought, yeah. And it's usually an ego thing, but they're really successful. And I can remember, you know, even on this podcast interviewing someone who's a very well-known agent. I'm not going to say names because we can't reveal any names till we decide to leave the real estate industry.
Oh, there'd be a book in that, wouldn't
there? You know, if we, yeah, exactly. But I can just remember, you know, like him saying, quote, unquote, if you talk to any of the greats, like myself or like this other agent or like this other agent, we all do it this way. And I was thinking, oh, was that expression the greats? And I was thinking, geez, you're not Wally Lewis, mate. Like, you know, it's like, you're not Alan Lane, speaking like the Queenslander I am now. But then that person is on TV now and I'm not. So does that tell you something?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, Andy made a couple of good points in the article. You know, so one, I suppose he was saying that attitude of backtracking a little bit. He said, you know, so one side of the spectrum, the nice side is the, you know, you're being overly humble. The other side is you being the asshole or being overly arrogant. And he made the claim, you know, so all the point that saying, yeah, so that is like a bright fire that typically, you know, sort of burns out quickly. But I suppose I would also counter in that there are probably a lot of people out there that have, you know, sort of got a very strong opinion that are incredibly successful. But it really depends upon what you are seeing on the surface versus what is underneath. So the middle line, what he's calling being the line of confidence, I think is where so that balance is. Andy's talked about a conversation he had with Dan White, and he was basically saying, behave like an expert, but act like a beginner in that you never become complacent in the actions that you take. So I think that was pretty telling. The one thing I did really like about it was, and something that really works for me is, you know, sort of have that geek-like mentality to detail and data because you are the expert. Yes, you can be likable, but you need to be able to provide some kind of value beyond being a really nice guy because that's what they're paying you for. You know, the analogy that he made of, you know, sort of being the doctor and listening to all of your problems and then saying, okay, so what medication do you want? As opposed to, you know, sort of being the prescriber of the solution. So it was a well-rounded article that, you know, sort of counted both sides. But yeah, I think Sue's right in that the nice guys don't always win, but you don't have to be a knob.
My favourite quote from the article was, "The difference between successful agents and struggling agents isn't personality, it's having clear standards and the confidence to maintain them." And we'll link up the article in the show notes because I think it's a really good read. But people always sort of say, I don't have the personality to be on video, or it's not actually about personality. But I think if you bring it back to the standards and values and being able to stick to your guns on certain things, like, I actually think that's pretty good advice. For those of you that are sort of looking for additional resources on this stuff, we just want to give you a few things that you might want to look up. So one hard place to be a nice guy, I think, or nice girl, I'm using that term interchangeably, is when it comes to handling objections and in negotiation. There's this great GPT that I found on ChatGPT called the Sales Objection Game. And it is super fun. And everyone that has been in my course so far has not won against ChatGPT. So it's a really good place to sort of hone your response skills to objections. It says, pitch me a product, and then you've got it. And then it sort of throws you an objection and you've got to answer it, which is pretty good.
And the best thing about that one is you can't offend the robot.
No, no, you can't. It does keep track though. So, you know, be careful. Anyway, mapping out your vision and values, that's something that we just did recently again with our 10 years, like what you will and won't accept. I think one of the things we sort of thought about too in our 10 years is, who have we enjoyed working with? Who have we not enjoyed working with? And I think there's a great quote from Seth Godin, the marketing guru, who says, if you don't know who you are and you're not sending clients to your competition, then you haven't niched enough. You don't know who you are enough. That if you're not sending clients to someone else, then you're missing a bit of a trick there.
Or be known for who you are.
Something, yeah. And then the other thing too, I think Chris Voss has Never Split the Difference, classic book on negotiation, on negotiating with empathy or tactical empathy. And then Tom Ferry, you know, like, he's got some great scripts. Like, I guess I'm not the biggest fan of scripts in the world, particularly now where it's like, I know you're hoping for a higher price, but my role as your agent is to be direct with you about the market feedback. Would you prefer I sugarcoat things, which is kind of what you were saying, or give you the honest insights that will help get you sold? So there's a bunch of those scripts, including some timeline expectations and stuff that we'll link up in the show notes. But if you're looking for scripts, look no further. Again, from the GPT Script Monster, which has a bunch of other suggestions in there as well, which we'll also link for you in the show notes. So if you're looking for buyer, seller scripts, whatever, it's a big database of scripts that we collected from Transform 2018. And I don't think scripts and dialogues have actually changed that much, have they? Or am I just being there?
No, well, so that was the other thing is that, and we'll probably get on to this one as well, but the authenticity that comes out of you by using scripts and dialogues to shape your conversation rather than recanting it, you know, word by word, is sort of is where it actually sort of brings you into your own, what I'm trying to say, your own personality comes out in the way in which you interpret the scripts and dialogues, as opposed to saying, I must say this word for word as it's laid out for me. So they've definitely got their place, particularly if you're starting out and looking for, all right, well, how do I handle these objections? You don't just say, oh, excuse me, I've got a few things to say which is going to answer this objection. Please be silent until I finish.
Yeah.
As opposed to using it as a guideline as to, you know, sort of how you can possibly get around those potentially sticky scenarios.
Yeah. Practice, practice, practice.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So topic number two.
Topic number two, reality TV. So we just had last week just landed listing Melbourne. Well, actually, this was out of Channel 9 this time. What was Lux Listings? That was a Channel 10?
Yeah, that was Amazon.
Amazon.
It's 9 now too.
Yeah, so Listing Melbourne was the new one which has just landed on the doorstep. But I suppose what we want to talk about is these real estate reality TV shows. Is it good for the real estate industry or not? You can watch it and sometimes you're looking at it, you're cringing, you're going, does that actually, you know, sort of happen in real life? You know, the old IRL. Or, you know, sort of is it something that is just feeding the stigma that the general public has? If there are scenes in the initial episode of Listing Melbourne that it just, I suppose, reinforces the attitude that the general public has towards agents. So I'm sort of on the fence as to whether it's actually sort of good for the industry or not. I probably err on the negative, but let's bat around both sides. What's your thoughts? Go the positive, go the steel man on this one.
Well, funny story about listing Melbourne is, as you know, I've been away for the last 2 weeks doing the workshops, AI-powered agency in Melbourne and Adelaide and Perth. And Channel 9 invited me to the premiere, and it happened to be on a day that I was in Victoria.
Winning.
Yeah, winning at Vue du Monde. And there was a nice little bottle of $250 something in the invite. So I jumped on it and went, yeah, sure, I'm coming. But I didn't look at the time that it was on, just assumed it was the Tuesday night and that it lined up with my diary. Anyway, as I was driving back from the Mornington Peninsula where I'd been giving a keynote, one of the Ray White groups, I saw my email ding, and it wasn't that I was holding my phone or anything, to be clear. I had my mobile phone in the car and I saw...
You always worry me when you say that, Sammy.
Yeah, I saw the email come up, the blanket email that said, thanks everyone for coming to the premiere of Listing Melbourne, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, how can that be? I'm still on my way back to Melbourne. And I was, you know, had my outfit there and all the rest of it, getting ready to go out and have a night out in Melbourne. But anyway, they must have had it in the afternoon. That'll teach me for not reading my emails properly. Anyway, so what that meant was that I had to wait, like everybody, to see the previews. And I was very interested to see how it would compare to Lux Listings, because obviously I've talked to Gavin a lot. Lux Listings has done a lot for Gavin's career and Simon's career, and even down to the branding of that's a TRG property or that's not a TRG property. Mm. And Gavin says having the cameras around was really good for the TV.
Let me give you a quick rundown of, you know, so if you haven't seen the first episode, and the producer, I think, spoke to Kat and he said that, you know, so this was a bit of a setup. So I'm going to give you the 20-second setup of Listing Melbourne. So Nicole Jacobs, you just mentioned Simon Cohen. So she's fresh into Cohen Handler. She's been a block buyer's advocate and an author.
I find that curious. Like, I have much respect for Nicole, and I feel like she's had her own brand. And so I sort of thought that that was a bit of an interesting move on Nicole's part going into Cohen. Nicole's own personal brand is incredibly strong, and she's very well respected and has been on the block and, you know, like all things. So that was a bit of a curious move. But she was, apart from her and Fraser, because he's been on Survivor, they were the only two that I recognised.
Yeah, well, Fraser, as you said, he's Big and Scott, you know, sort of ex-Survivor contestant, heroes and villains. So he was one of the villains in the Spice Girl pack, and I think he only made it to day 14 or something out of the 57.
Yeah, because he was caught in the crossfire of that epic tribal council between...
collateral damage, blindsided. Yeah. Well, who isn't blindsided on...
Yeah, no, but that was the big one. That was the big one between George and Dave Scowell, remember it. But anyway.
George and Simon, wasn't it?
George and Simon, yeah. And Fraser was just the damage.
Collateral damage.
Has anyone checked where the Lords of Property have posted anything about Listing Melbourne?
No.
I Lords might of do that. Anyway,
let us know.
Who are the other cast members?
So alongside with Nicole, you've also got Tabitha Robbs. She's another property buyer's advocate with her own business. Her byline basically said she's said to be reshaping Melbourne real estate. So there you go. Andrew Campbell, Bayside, 14 years in the area, says that he's in discreet sales, four kids, Watson the dog. It's like smudge sticks and gemstones. And then you've also got Diana Kraslowska, who's a renovator and developer, passion for real estate, and been in the game for a couple of years. So I think that we need to start a drinking game if we're going to keep on watching that show. The amount of times they say, I'm passionate about real estate.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say drinking game every time somebody says Brighton. I feel like I'm in a Jimmy Reese skit. Like, you know, Brighton.
Sorry.
Yeah, the first episode didn't disappoint with all the references to Brighton. Yeah, no, I'm not going to say it. But there is a bit of a, it is funny that, I don't know whether I'm starting to say Queenslander or not, but I remember the whole premise of My Fair Lady back in the day was that you could tell in England where a person was from by their accent.
By the accent, yeah.
And I do think Australia's starting to get that way too. I definitely think that you can tell when someone's from Melbourne. I definitely think you can tell when someone's from New South Wales. And I definitely think you can pick a Queenslander. I'm not too sure about the West Coast, but there's definitely a, like, you know, a Prue and Trude. Anyway, can I say that? But let's get back to the question of whether this stuff is good for the industry or not. I think there's good and bad, right? Number one is I think it creates some unrealistic expectations. Even agents that have been on the block for years will say that the whole thing's a setup and is not terribly realistic. I think there's a possibility that there's a resource drain on contestants and then somebody gets painted as the villain. Like I remember on MAFS, there was that guy a couple of years ago who got painted, you know, he was a sales guy that ended up working for the agency while he was on the podcast too, ended up married to a Fugle. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yep.
You know, 5 minutes of fame and all that.
Ewan.
No, that wasn't it. But he got married to a property manager and then they ended up together. And then I was sort of thinking, wow, that's a real estate match made in heaven.
I think it also does give, you know, sort of at times the wrong take as well. I mean, the negotiation session between Nicole and another agent, which wasn't the part of the Fab Five, where she said the property was 5 to 5.5 million and Nicole came straight in at 4.6. Oh, it was 5 to 5.5 plus the beach box on Brighton.
Yeah. Say it again.
Brighton.
Yeah.
And Nicole came in at 4.6. The agent said 5 to 5.5. Okay, well, how about 4.8, 5 to 5.5? How about 4.8 plus 200 for the beach box? An agent said, yep, okay, we've got a deal. No vendor consultation, no nothing. So I think, you know, so the uninitiated probably would think, okay, well, the agent's just going to make decisions on my behalf. I don't know whether it's just the theatrics of it, but you're right also in the contestants can also be, they're at the whim of the producer and the editor as to how they're painted. I mean, there was a scene there of Fraser hamming up with his greeting cards.
Oh, I know. That was a bit, that's why I was wondering, has anyone checked Lords of Property yet?
Yeah.
But I was sort of thinking that it's the same thing because he basically talked about having a family the same way that you might talk about having a facial disease.
Yeah.
And I sort of thought that's a bit out of order. But
it's also polarizing not only for, I suppose, the buyers and sellers, like the regular community, but it's also polarizing within the industry as well.
Yeah.
So we put a little bit of a poll out to an internal group here and the reaction was very mixed. There were some people that hadn't seen it and that, you know, had given it, you know, like a solid 7 out of 10. But then there were some people that basically, so just reading one here, none of these shows are good for our industry. They reflect and celebrate selfishness and poor ethics. But then if it was all rainbows and roses, then it really probably wouldn't make great TV, would it?
Yeah, well, there's two quotes of the episode. One was, how great is that void? And I thought, that's a metaphor for so many things.
How, look at that void. And then, how's that serenity?
Yeah, look at how wonderful that void is. And then the other one was Nicole Jacobs, reality TV's raised the bar on presentation, which I agree. It's raised the bar on how you look, how you come across, how you present yourself, how you present properties. Like that's where the bar has been raised. She also said that smart agents don't copy the drama. They copy the attention to detail. And I think that's really good. Now, when it comes to sort of what's the actionable takeaways out of this, I think that you don't have to be like, what an incredible time to be alive right now. You don't have to be on TV to elevate your personal brand. You've got one of these and probably a connection to the internet with one of these. And there is really nothing stopping you bar a bear chasing you than getting your name out there, like on video. And everyone has that same opportunity. The only thing that I'd be wary of while this show is on, and I say this to agents all across Australia anyway, you got to be talking local against what the mainstream media are saying about the property market because we know that no country is an island, no property market is ubiquitous across the whole country. Don't let the mainstream media have the narrative. And then I think the other thing is we've written stories that throughout the year, which we'll link up in the show notes, have a content calendar and stick to it. AI has made all that stuff so much easier that really you can be creating scripts, you can be creating videos, you can be creating useful content. get that media kit so that when the newspapers come calling or whatever, have your personal media kit ready to go. That would be the things. You don't need the TV show. And I do think, personally, I think it was a little bit of a Me Too. Even down to the opening credits had that same song, the same vibe, the lower thirds look the same. Actually create your own little behind-the-scenes show with your iPhone and it would be a lot more relatable and authentic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And show you a real person, yeah.
Just one thing about, you know, sort of having a media kit as well for when the media comes knocking. Just think as well, make yourself available for the media, you know, sort of give them a reason to get in contact with you. Have that media kit saying, this is what I specialize in. So why you would want to contact me if you want comment. Don't make it their job to be interested in you. Make it so that you are interesting to them. And that's
not their job to be interested. It's your job to be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that was Daphne Masparoli that said that.
Absolutely. And I think that will be something that you could really take away from that is, yes, be the local expert. Remember that mainstream media is always going to take the attitude, if it bleeds, it leads. So more often than not, you will get the bad news that will come out of the media. But, you know, sort of you as the local expert, don't try and go national and compete with Rupert. Be local and be somebody that your local residents are going to look at you and go, all right, what's the real news? What do I need to know?
Yeah, that's it. I was talking to someone in Canberra this week and she was sort of talking about how she puts the numbers together. She's a buyer's agent too. Talks about how she puts the numbers together for her newsletter, which is amazing. I'm not going to give away all of her secrets here. But I said, you're like Lady Whistledown. And I think,
dearest gentle reader.
Dearest gentle reader. Yeah, without sounding like that. But you think about that show Bridgerton and how everyone, you know, Lady Whistledown was the person with the real power because she was the holder of the gossip and the spreader of local news about Don. And I think if you're a real estate agent and thinking about your own newsletter the same way, you want to be late. Even the boys, you kind of want to be Lady Whistledown. You want to be the person that people come to for the exclusive gossip that they cannot get anywhere else. That's her key strength. So,
particularly with the loss of local papers, because that was where people were getting the local news.
Huge opportunity there. Anyway, okay, so is reality TV good or bad for the industry? Yes or no? Out of 10?
Look, I think in the way in which it's represented in the media or for these particular reality shows, some do it well. I was very awkward in some places where I was watching Listing Melbourne, just thinking, oh,
yep.
God. But then, you know, so on the flip side, you see some other shows and you just go, you know, sort of that's a master craftsman at work.
Yeah. Well, let's see how the show progresses. But we've got time for one more topic right now, which is the topic of AI communication. Now, as you know, I've been sort of doing a lot of travel this year. And I was at a conference, Barry Plank conference, where I was speaking, but there was a lot of AI speakers. And I heard it suggested that Sam Altman, the creator of OpenAI, he's quite convinced that years ago it used to be how many employees do you need to make $1 million in revenue. Now it's how many employees per million. So, for example, OnlyFans has something like 13 employees and 32 million. So it's like over $1 million per employee. And now Sam Altman's saying, well, you know, AI and ChatGPT tools are going to lead to the first $1 billion business by a solo person. And one of the speakers kind of took that idea and said, well, could there be a $1 billion agent? Now, speaking to the elephant in the room, could there be a $1 billion solo agent using all the AI tools? So that would mean outbound calls handled by an AI, inbound calls handled by an AI, scale yourself with video through AI, send all that stuff out digitally so that maybe you're not actually Lady Whistledown in a suburb called Broadbeach Waters anymore. Maybe you are selling properties all over the state or all over the country. So I just want to know, well, I want to bat it around with you because I have some very strong opinions on this one. Could AI create a $1 billion solo agent?
Well, the answer to that, I think, is absolutely you could do it today if you wanted to, but then what is the outcome that we're aiming for here? I would really see that this would be an interesting scenario in that the for sale by owner side of things could potentially just go completely AI, in that you would have the tools that an owner, that an FSBO campaign could be run by a property owner themselves. If somebody garage in a, you know, sort of dark room, was there sitting, tinkering away and putting all the relevant GPTs together and creating all of the content. Can definitely see that.
Virtually staging all the rooms.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So doing all the marketing, using the technology in your smartphones to be able to pull together a multimedia marketing campaign, it is by no means anywhere not impossible. The new iPhones with LiDAR capabilities got the ability to be able to scan a room and turn it into a 3D walkthrough. So you would normally be paying for those to be professionally done with by a skilled technician. Anyone with that sort of device in the hand will be able to do it themselves. The flip side is, you know, so could you have a single agent being a billion-dollar agent? Yes, obviously, absolutely you could. So if I'm going to throw this question to you, though, Sam, is that where's the line between efficiency driven out of AI and then losing the human touch? The human then becomes irrelevant in the transaction, which none of us want.
Mm. Well, that's it. I've had a lot of people ask me, should they use these? I think they're dialers. And we got RoboDial by Seller Masters, remember? And, you know, and I think there's no quicker way. It's weird, number one. So if you've got an AI trying to pass itself off as human, it's weird. I think it breaks trust. And I think at the end of the day, real estate's always about trust. And like I said, I have some strong feelings on that. So you don't want to sort of hire yourself some digital employee called Amy, like, you know, with AI at the front and, you know, have that person pass themselves off as a human. I think that's the quickest way to break trust. The other thing is too, you know, I know how the Cellar Masters call made me feel. It sort of made me go visit one of the small winemakers immediately because I was kind of thinking, they don't care. They don't care about me. I'm just a number to them. And, you know, maybe they'll make a few sales, but I think, you know, and this is where I've been teaching everyone in the workshops is use AI to superpower, you know, use AI to make your content calendar, use AI to script your videos, use AI to help you win listings in the listing presentation, use AI to create your marketing, but use the time that you save on doing all that stuff to build relationships. And I think inbound's fine, like calling inbound is fine and using video is fine. So long as whatever you're doing with AI announces that it's AI. So how that would play out is, okay, inbound call, I'm using a tool called Lucy as my voicemail. And so someone calls me and I'm not available. Lucy picks it up for me and says, hi, I'm Lucy, Samantha McLean's AI assistant. So it's actually being announced straight away that it's not a person. And I think that is fine. So can I leave your email message or can I help you with something else? And if you have a paid plan of Lucy, and I'm not a shareholder in Lucy at all, you can actually sort of say, oh, well, here's my open homes, or you could actually provide Lucy a knowledge base to answer frequently asked questions, or maybe she streamlines some of the triaging of inbound maintenance calls for property managers. Like there's all sorts of things like that. But the fundamental thing here is I'm Lucy, Sam's AI assistant, so that the person knows that it's AI.
Yeah, it really is like sort of the next step of press 1-4, press 2-4. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like an IVR really, but it's an AI voice. And I was going to say the other thing is with the videos, we've seen a lot of amazing uses for digital avatar videos, but I wouldn't be getting on your next market update or training an avatar to do your next market update without saying something in the beginning like, hi, I'm Sam's digital assistant. This was not filmed by the real Sam, but it is an AI version of Sam. The same thing with, I think everyone's gone quite crazy with the translation of languages, and I'm all for that. But please don't tell everyone that you're a polyglot speaking multiple languages actually sort of disclose that it's AI, because people aren't stupid. And I think
even if it's just a footnote, so like a lower third or something, yeah. So,
yeah, this video is AI.
Just a disclaimer.
Yeah. The human in the loop factor is so important. And I think, like I said before, I think that trust, you know, real estate will always be about trust. The real estate transaction will always be about trust. But with 200 million people on ChatGPT and countless others on all the other large language models and all of that sort of thing at the moment, clearly 200 million people trust the opinions of ChatGPT when they're doing things like making meal plans or making exercise plans or making marketing plans. So, you know, there's already, I don't know, like there's an inferred trust there. And I think if you as a real estate agent don't add value to what the person can do with, you know, what client or customer can do with the AI, that's a slippery slope, because whether the customer trusts the AI or trusts you is actually entirely in your hands. It's what you do with the AI and what you do with the time you save and how you use it to make life better for yourself and the client that really is going to mean something in the future. That's what I think.
And the mental part about it as well is that we are not even crawling, you know, when it comes to AI. This is not a mature state of AI. I know how much you keep yourself up to date with the hours and hours and hours of updates that happen across the various different large language models and all the different AI generators. And capability just seems to be leapfrogging on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And this is not a bucket that's getting close to be overfilled. We are absolutely living in an amazing time of time. What we will see in 5 years' time is going to be, we'll look back on 2024, 2025 and go, wow, what a different time of the world that was. So if you're not embracing AI for the right reasons now and understanding the capabilities of what you can use it for, this is not a moment that's just going to stand still. It's just going to, that snowball, you're going to get bigger.
Yeah, 2025 is going to be a cracker. So I think you just survived your first episode of this.
You think so?
So
did I do all right? Can I come back?
Well, you know, like you committed to coming back, so you're going to have to. But if you were to pick one of your favorite sort of action points or takeaways from everything that we've chatted about today, what would it be?
I really resonated with what Andy was saying about nice guys don't always win. I think you can temper that. You can still be a nice guy, but make sure that you're bringing some value to the table. Be the nice guy, but make sure you're issuing the prescription. How about yourself, Sammy?
Well, I think my takeaway, and we do talk about it a lot on Elite Agent, is you don't need to be on a TV show to raise your brand. You've got all the tools and all the know-how, and even now you've got AI to help you do that. And so the way you market yourself and the way that you show up for your community is actually entirely in your hands as well. So hopefully that was useful. Hopefully lots of actionable tips and things like that. If you guys out there have any questions or any topics that you want us to bring to the table, any guests that you might want to hear from, do let us know. We'll still be doing courageous conversations and guest interviews and things like that, but we hope to bring you one of these deep dives quite regularly, because you heard it here first. Mark has said yes. So with that, thank you very much. And how about we sign off for today?
Good on you. Thanks, Sammy.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast, with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.